Right at one. So thanks for joining us today. I have a little script I'm going to try and adhere to as closely as possible. I'm Darla Dodge. I'm the Vice President of Finance and Administrative Services. I'd like to call today's joint meeting of the WNC Institutional Advisory Council and Western Nevada College Foundation to order. Today's meeting agenda was posted in accordance with Nevada Open Meeting Law. The meeting is being video conferenced from WNC Carson City to Virgil Ghetto Hall on the WNC's Fallon campus. Hi, Fallon campus. When public comments are taken, please start by stating your name and who you represent for the record. In the interest of time, I reserve the right to limit comments to 3 minutes per person and will respectfully interrupt if time is exceeded. If your comments have already been presented by someone else, please note that and do not repeat the information. I would like to remind the WNC IAC and WNC Foundation Board members that whenever you are speaking, always please first identify yourself for the record. It is important we correctly identify speakers and their corresponding comments. Finally, I'd like to remind our guests to please sign in to the attendance sheet if you have not done so already. Deb, would you please do roll call?
Yes, bear with me. I have two to call. WNC Foundation, Tara Alto, Jeff Brigger.
Here.
Laura Carrion, Tanya Champa, Amy Clemens, Barbara Dineo, Sean Davison, Jamie DeVega, Daphne DeLeon, Rennell Dotson, Larry Goodnight, Lisa Granahan, Darcy Houghton, Kathy Huber Halbardier, Michelle Ketton, I believe it's Carol McIntosh. That's not what I wrote. Carol, are you here? No. Kirsten Plemmel, Robert Ramsdale.
Here.
Rochelle Tisdale.
Here.
Okay, for the IAC, Tim Dyer, Rob Hooper, Laura Iams, Mike Jackson, Michelle Joy.
Here.
Alan Jerconis, Nick Morano, Ricky Medina, Mary Pierzynski.
Here.
Carrie Richardson, Rupert Ruiz, Buzz Sharman, Richard Stokes.
He's in Fallon,
okay, thank you. Richard Stokes, Teresa White. All right, thank you.
Okay, so moving on to agenda item number one, public comment. Is there any public comment for Carson? Okay, is there any public comment for Fallon? There will be other opportunities during this meeting for public comment, so. Okay, so agenda item number two. This will be time meeting with Dr. Vincent Solis, who is here. Information item only. This is opportunity for you to meet the members of the IAC and Foundation Board to ask questions of Dr. Solis and hold an open discussion with him. The public will have an opportunity to participate during public comment. So it is open.
Do you want me to start? Or?
Sure. Okay. Absolutely.
Well, first let me thank each of you for being here today. I am very privileged and honored to have been given an opportunity to come to Carson City and let you know a little bit about myself and find out a little bit about you. I'll give you a little bit of background in terms of who I am and what's brought me to this place in my career. I have been in higher education for the last 26 years. I started out right out of college. I was initially going to go to law school, and I got a job working in the game room, and I couldn't believe people got paid to do student services. So it evolved from there. So the first couple of years of my career, I spent it working on student leadership, student success, on the student services side. Spent about 10 years doing that, then moved on to another campus, another part of my career, where I took on some different administrative duties, started working with more student engagement, transforming the student experience on campus. Did that for about 10 years, working with student organizations, chess participation, athletics, housing, student activities, governance, all the things that come in a traditional student services division. And then back in 2010, about 8 years ago, I got selected as Vice President of Student Services and Enrollment Services. And I did that for about 5 years. And at that time, I was responsible for all the student services areas, which are very traditional, along with all of the enrollment areas. I was tasked to modify how enrollment was done at the campus. And I did did that for 5 years. And then in my present role, where I'm at now, as the senior vice president, I handle the three largest divisions on campus, which include instruction, which is my primary duty, along with enrollment and student services. So a broad array in between those 26 years of working in higher education, again, doing everything from instruction to student services. I've been doing enrollment a long time, so very familiar with all of those key areas, and have a broad background in the administrative functions of a college. And the role that I do now, I'm essentially the number two person on campus. We've got 12,000 students. About 11,000 students, we'll have hopefully close to 12,000 in the fall. We have a very large dual enrollment program, makes up about 40% of our students. The rest are on campus at two different locations, about 8.5 miles apart. So we offer everything from the technical courses, the dual enrollment program, traditional academic services, and moving into the fall, we have the start of hiring our new faculty that are gonna be in our first 4-year degree, which is gonna be a bachelor's of science in nursing. So that kind of gives a little bit of my background. Tell you a little bit about myself on a personal side. I'm the youngest of 11 children, so I have a very large family. Being the youngest allowed me to learn a lot of different things about life, because I could get away with a lot of things. But I was also mentored and coached by my family, so I learned things like respect, the value of hard work, being committed, and the most important thing in everything that I've ever had, the legacy that my parents left me, was in education. So it has been my life's work to educate others, and I'm interested in the opportunity here, so I'm open for questions and like to hear from you.
Rochelle Tisdale, WSC Foundation Board. Have you had a chance to visit all the facilities? Have you been out to Fallon? Have you been all over campuses, all over the campuses?
I have not been to all the campuses, ma'am, but I am actually, in the discussions that I've had earlier, depending on if authorization is for that, I would like to visit the Fallon campus along with a few others. I've got a couple of days here, so depending on how much time I have to get there, but the plan would be to visit the campuses. And I know that being active and involved at all campuses is important, but at the end of the day, we're one institution in different locations, and having a presence and having that communication and being active, being involved, if given the opportunity to be here, I would visit the campus, all campuses, on a very regular basis. I believe in communication, and whether it's a student at Fallon or a student here, my mission is to educate people. So I grew up in a very small rural community, 4 streets, no pavement, no stores, no post office. Getting to the nearest educational institution was 40 miles away. It wasn't easy. So there's a special place in my heart for rural communities and rural education, and that's a big draw to the campus here. So, but rest assured, Mrs. Zell, that if given the opportunity, you'd see a lot of me out there.
Question in Fallon.
Yes, sir.
Hello. My name is Buzz Sharman. I'm here in Fallon. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Dr. Solis, just to piggyback on the last question in regards to whether you have come to Fallon yet or not, have you ever worked at a multi-campus institution? And what do you think would be the challenges that you would face as president of a college that not only has campuses, but also rural and remote centers?
That's a great question. The experience that I have is that we have a multi-campus location where I'm at now. We have 2 campuses. They're about 10 miles apart, so it's a little bit different type of setup that's here. But we do have different campuses as it relates to our rural high schools, and we have been working very closely with them to facilitate how we can provide education to them, not just in the traditional manner. It's not just about being visible out there. One of the things that we've done is with our community partners at the high schools, whether they're in the city or in the rural communities, we have a day designated just for the outreach that takes place in our high schools, and there are 9 of them. So we make sure that, and it's not just a team of folks, it's a team from that campus, a team from our campus, myself included, because we want to address any issues that are taking place right away to ensure the continuity of the education. I think that what's happening now with rural education, and it's a good thing, but it comes with its challenges, is that there are tools that allow for instruction. One of the things that we're looking at right now and moving into the coming year, we're running a pilot program with digital and adaptive learning. So the tools are there, the software that's there, but it's a matter of communicating and training the teachers, because with these adaptive learning technologies, we can provide customized instruction in different areas for different students. So you may be teaching a math class in Fallon, but you've got 20 or 30 students that are all learning differently. So our goal is to make sure that we ensure that each student is receiving that individualized instruction that can't happen in a traditional setting, because there's only one teacher to 30 students or 20 students. So these technologies are available, but I do feel that the soft skills related to the communications, the presence, having a phone number where someone can get a hold of you. One of the things that I do, the individuals at the rural districts, they can pick up the phone and call me directly at any time. I've got a 24-hour return policy. If I'm not in the office or not available, my staff know to take down the number and say, well, how late can he call you? If you say call as late as 11 or 12, I will make that contact, because I want to make sure that whatever issue is needing to be addressed takes place. So it's about communications, it's about presence, it's about working with the needs of the campuses, and more importantly, I think it's about accessing the technological tools that are available to help ensure the success of the students in those rural communities.
Thank you. Can I just ask one follow-up question for
that? Yes, sir.
Appreciate your answer, first of all, but there's so many different varieties or delivery methods for instruction. Online, interactive video, whatever the new technology is, whatever you want to call it. Where do you place face-to-face traditional instruction as far as the value of face-to-face instruction with all of these other technologies?
Great question. You know, and I know that there's a lot of tools out there, but there's nothing that can replace a teacher. I think that one of the things that has happened over the last, I'd say 20 years in working in this business, is that as educators, particularly in administrative offices, we've outsourced the greatest tool that we have as it relates to student success, and that's our faculty. I think that as administrators, as a vice president or as a president, the role is to provide those teachers the tools that they need, but there is no substitute for that instruction. I know that online courses are not for everyone, and I know that there are techniques like Quality Matters, which ensures the integrity of an online course. But having face-to-face instruction, I think, is still something that is special to the relationship that happens between student and the instructor. And at the end of the day, that relationship is what leads to a greater part of the student success with those students. So there's new technologies, new softwares, new approaches evolving all the time, but nothing can replace the role of an instructor in the classroom.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Another question.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Michelle Bongiro, and I have questions about enrollment. How do you propose to increase enrollment at WSC? It's been flat for a number of years.
Yeah, I looked at the data, and I think that one of the things that you'll find in my background is enrollment specialties. One of the things that we looked at very closely when I took over the role where I'm at now is increasing enrollment. I think that all community colleges were faced with struggles, and they still are. When you think about that, for every 100 adults that you have in high school, you only have 94, 93 kindergarten students. There are challenges that are happening, not just right now, but they're going to be happening in the future. And I think that as a good enrollment manager, you have to be able to anticipate where the changes are. There are changes that are happening in demographics. I think that you need to customize the marketing to ensure the message and the quality of what happens at Western. In all communities, you need to be present. I have no issues going on recruitment trips, regardless of my position or what I do. I'm at the high schools, I meet with students. You have to have that presence. You have to have a team approach. I think the other thing that's very important is to understand how you approach student enrollment at its basics tenet, which include the recruitment of students, the onboarding or the admissions of students, along with how you retain them, and then ultimately how you get them across the stage successfully. So I'm fortunate to have a broad background in enrollment strategies, everything from development communication plans, working in dual enrollment, training recruiters. Recruiters are not just recruiters or outreach specialists. You have to train them to sell a product. And I think the other thing that we don't do with our students enough is students need to understand at that level the message they receive from everybody that works at the campus about the importance of fitting into campus and what their role is as a student. I think that we've gotten away from teaching students how to set goals. I was glad to hear from one of the instructors here that we teach a student success course because, again, we're deviating, I think, in some areas from some of the most traditional basic principles that work. So as it relates to enrollment and strategies, recruitment, the marketing, the efforts to be there in presence, I think you also need to look at emerging markets. I think that there's opportunities there with the Hispanic population because at least at Western, looking at how close you are to becoming an HSI status that allows you to get grants, which allows you to keep more students. So it's a full gamut of operations, but having that background in enrollment and recruitment, we've managed to increase our enrollment over the last couple of years. Working very deliberately with our high schools, we were able to sell, having, at least where I'm at Laredo, becoming the single provider of dual enrollment courses. And we've gone from 600 students a couple of years ago, we've got 4,000 coming in the fall. So our challenge isn't on the enrollment side, it's managing the growth. So given the opportunity here, I will bring those same strategies. It's about being involved, it's about working with a team to get out and get those students. So a lot of times students have the questions, when you think about how much unused monies are left on the table for financial aid, 96% of those students will tell you, I didn't think I qualified. And I think it's a shame that we leave all those funds on the table because the students don't get the right message. So it's about inspiring them, but it's also about making it easy for them because this idea of going to college used to be a pathway to success. It's a requirement now. If you don't have an education in today's economy, the global markets will shape your destiny, and it will not be good without the certificates, without the associate's degrees, and or without the four-year degrees. So, you know, two-thirds of all jobs next couple of years are going to require some kind of credential. So we have a public responsibility to educate the students and the community. So. And there's a lot of details that we can get into on the recruitment side and on the enrollment side, but I think that the best thing about Western is that it's positioned to increase its enrollment just based off of its mission, which really goes into how you impact the community, and it doesn't just tell you what you do. So I think kudos to the team here, but I think you're poised for growth. It's just a matter of bringing the components together, making it happen.
Go ahead.
Michelle,
second question.
I don't think you can hear me.
So, Michelle, this is Darla. I apologize, but you're going to have to wait till for public comment for the fact that you're not on either the ISC or the foundation board. So we do have to adhere to the open meeting law rule. Sorry about that. Thank you.
Michelle Tisdale, Foundation Board. So in the last year, WNC has had a lot of administrative changes, with presently being we've had lots of interim positions being filled. If you were to get this position, how would you go about filling those positions? And what kind of time frame would you have those filled? Because we have an interim dean, we've got, you know, various, it's a lot. And it all happened in a short period of time. So how would you positions and when?
Yes, I have
the same. I'm really desperate for the when piece.
Yeah, let me, so I have the same questions because I did notice that in the research and talking to folks, there's a lot of interim positions. I think that a president or a VP or someone who's responsible for the charge of the college has two primary roles. As a president, the charge is the institution sustainable as it relates to its finances. As a leader, which is the other side of this coin, the single most important thing that a leader can do is surround themselves with good people. I'm a big believer in the team. Now, I understand that the folks that are in these holding patterns probably have a lot of anticipation about what types of changes come, what happens. I don't have a specific answer in terms of what the process would be, but I would have to be here to kind of determine that. But what I can tell you is that I would give every individual an opportunity to be successful, because the way things work and the way an institution is successful isn't by one person. It doesn't matter which candidate is going to be up here. You could have the greatest president in the history of academia, but if they don't have a good team behind them, they will not be successful. And for me, the team is everything. So it's a matter of getting to know individuals. I think that the first 4 to 6 months are critical as you develop those relationships. It's about understanding what their needs are. It's about understanding what their goals are. I'm a big believer in promoting from within, because at community colleges, and I have a responsibility as a vice president to train up the folks that I want to ensure continue with the institution. Those individuals have a responsibility to themselves to make sure that they're ready when the time comes. One of the things I always tell our staff and our leadership group, one of the things that I did was I put together a leadership academy, because I know that sometimes, especially where we're at, it's hard to find folks that want to come to campus. We're in a rural area, similar to here. It's a larger city, but we're several hours away driving distance from the larger urban area. So attracting folks can sometimes be difficult, but there's nothing like growing your own. But you have to take the time as a leader to do that. You have to have the program in place. You have to teach the courses. You have to give them what the expectations are, and more importantly, what they need to know when the opportunity comes up. So I think that for those folks that are in those holding patterns, it's about developing the relationship. It's about understanding how together you would be successful. And hopefully that would happen sooner than later, but I can't give you a specific on it, because a lot determines on what the vision would be for moving Western forward. So, but the team is everything. You can't do it alone in this position.
Go ahead. Yep.
Hi, Dr. Solis. Jeff Brigger with the Foundation. First of all, I just want to say thank you for your time today and your interest in Western and the communities it serves. Quick question on maybe your thoughts or strategies as it relates to partnerships with private industry in terms of workforce development. As you know, this area is growing pretty rapidly, and there's going to be a lot of demand on that over the next few years.
Absolutely. I think that one of the things, at least, and again, not having the benefit of knowing everything that happens at Western, one of the things that I did see, at least in the graduation rates, is you've had an increase in graduation rates, but they're all at the associates level. And I think that if you look at what's happening with certificate accomplishments, there's still a lot of growth that can happen there. Most of the graduates received a different credential other than certificate. So as it relates to building partnerships and getting students with the credentials that they need to access gainful employment, meaningful jobs, you have to have those relationships with the community. Each of our workforce programs has an advisory board. And that advisory board for every single program meets each semester, provides input, feedback. They let us know what's happening. They let us know what the students are doing well. And one of the things that we found was real surprising is that in several of our advisory committees, they told us, you're doing a great job getting the students prepared on the technical side, but our students that you're producing are struggling with their soft skills. So how to shake hands, how to be working on time, how to set goals. So we're restructuring those components, but I think that you have to have those relationships in the community, and the relationships in the community can't just be partnerships. You're looking for that deep connectedness that says we're all in this together. So whether it's providing a industry training, whether it's providing a specific academic program, you know, one of the things that we did with our cybersecurity, I know that you're building a cybersecurity program here through a grant. We've had our program for a while, but now we're building an institute that has stackable credentials, so that we continue to feed students the right information, the right type of training, so they can be relevant in their work, because that field changes so rapidly. So you have to be responsive to the needs of the community. You need to take the time to go out and meet with those partners. But I think it's more than just those partnerships. I think that there needs to be an understanding that we're all in it together. We have to be successful. An educated community is a better community. And I think that you have to work and you have to reach out. You have to meet the folks. You have to get to know them. Find out what their needs are as industry, and connect our students to it. Because if you look at what's happening in California with the push on the certificate education, less than 8% of the credentials issued in the country are for those certificates with the skills. And if you don't have those skills in this workforce, you're not going to be competitive. So if you, and I'll take it just a little bit further on this concept of meta major. So you got a 4-year degree, and I love English, I love history, I love psychology, but it doesn't prepare you in specific areas to reach certain functions without a skill set. So now getting those students to come back and learn computers, learn cybersecurity, learn welding, learn different things that will make you more applicable in the workforce, because the dynamics that are shaping the work of tomorrow, those forces are not gonna be governed by anything that any single community does. So you have to work together to make that happen. So. Partnerships are everything, especially in workforce. You need to keep a pulse on what's happening, be responsive to the training needs, and provide those academic programs. There are some challenges there, obviously, in some areas. You got to have the technology, you got to have investments in faculty. They're hard to find, but that's where everything is headed as it relates to technology and the changing face of work.
Is there any other questions? Go ahead. Make sure you state your name.
Foundation. So in Nevada, we have to work closely with the legislature for biennium to try to pass bills that will help ensure the future of our community colleges and dual enrollment programs, etc. Do you have experience with, I was just reading your bio, looking for experience like working with the legislatures in many other states, lobbying, anything like that? And if you were to take this position, how do you see yourself getting involved with that?
Well, it's an important part to it. Obviously, there has to be the role between the president here and the chancellor, because there are areas that are unique to each component. So figuring out those elements would be important. But as it relates to working with legislature, we meet with our congressmen, we meet with representatives, we just met with the chair of the coordinating board for our institution, our state, to address some of the issues, particularly in dual. So there's a lot of different components to working with those areas. We have a large campus, so we have an office that specifically does legislative affairs. Those individuals are the ones that go out to the state and meet with the legislatures. On our end, at least in my role, I focus on enrollment, on the instruction, and on the student services side. But it's not anything that I'm not prepared to do. I think that building relationships and doing this for as long as I have, you need to have relationships at every level, from the folks that need training all the way to people making decisions at the state capitol, which obviously you guys are in. So that gives you access, it gives you an opportunity. So relationships are everything. I think that if you're able to do that with one individual, you can do that with all. And it's a matter of being able to not just tell the story of what's happening at Western. I think the other thing that is critical for any president or for any vice president is to be able to use the data of your accomplishments and present a compelling story about what's happening at the institutions. I think one of the things that's missed by legislatures as a whole, and we missed the boat in terms of providing the message, is that there are no other entities in any state or at the federal level that can provide answers to the challenges that affront us as a society. That's going to happen in K-12, it's going to happen at the community college level, and it's going to happen at the university. They're the only ones that have the answers to the challenges for tomorrow. And I think that it's important for us to be able to tell a compelling story about what happens at our institutions and how we're helping shape that future, so that they get an understanding of what exactly do you do at a community college. A lot of folks in the legislative area may have an idea. They obviously may have gone to a university or not, and they have an idea, but when they really get into the nuts and bolts of what happens on the college and what the challenges are, I think the ability to present a compelling message of what the needs are and how we can make our communities better through education is where the essentials of that relationships happen with legislatures. That's a good question.
Did you have another one, Rochelle? Go ahead.
Fire away.
But because I have multiple roles with WNC and working with the foundation board, how would you work with the board to keep us informed of where the college is going, where it's at, what the needs are? Maybe even helping us with ideas for fundraising,
sure.
Things like that.
Absolutely. Communication is everything. I believe firmly that you can't over-communicate enough. I think that you have to be diligent in not only presenting the case for what needs to happen, at least from the vision of the institution, but working closely with the foundation, raising the partners. I think that as it relates to the foundation, I think one of the things that's really important is having a sustainability plan. And I think community colleges could do a little bit better in this area across the board. I think that they're starting to realize that the struggles of budgets are very real, and I think they're on everyone's mind at all the time. So working with the foundation, communicating what the needs are is one part of it, but I think they're working closely with the foundation to develop a sustainability plan, which entails things like capital campaign, alumni relations. Community college dropped the ball on alumni relations all the time. And I think that's a huge component, because if you think about all the gifts that are made to higher education, less than 5% are made to community colleges. But yet we educate more than half of all the students in the U.S. So where's the disconnect? The disconnect comes from we don't tell our story well enough. There's a million different things that are happening on campus that are amazing. You transform the lives of the students that come to campus, but sometimes we don't tell that story because we get so busy doing what we do operationally, because there's so few of us on colleges. So I think that working with the foundation to have a plan, I think that the other area that is definitely something I would consider for Western, if here, once I kind of got into the items, is having access to grants. I think that at least on our institution, we have one office that deals with federal grants, another office that deals with state grants, and they are a tremendous resource that comes in with money every year that we could not do without. But we make a dedicated, committed effort on our end to have those offices in place. So there's a lot of different things. It's the alumni, it's having the campaigns, it's the friend development, it's the fund development. And again, it's being able to articulate what's happening on campus and where the success points are to some, because when you think of donors, there's two types of donors. There's the donor that is gonna give because they have a compelling reason, because it's something that they enjoy, be it art, be it mathematics, be it whatever. But if you wanna tap into big money, you need to convert that donor into an investor. And that investor is not gonna give up his or her money that they worked very diligently for just any particular reason. They wanna know how their investment is gonna make a difference. And I always look back to a quote that I heard from Carlos Slim, who's a very famous Mexican businessman, he's one of the richest men in the world. He says, you know, charities have been fighting poverty forever and nothing has changed. He said, I can do more by providing people jobs than you can in your charity work, even though it's just as important. And he's right in that aspect. So what he's saying is that give me reasons to invest in what you're doing rather than asking me for money for a particular cause. So I think that one of the things that needs to happen is that we need to be able to examine where our investors are and where our donors are and also where our friends are, because you don't just necessarily have to give contributions in a financial manner. There's also talent that can be contributed. There's mentors in the community. There's Rotarians in the community that you can bring to campus, and linking the students to real world experiences. So the big push for community colleges is student success. The more student success that we have, the more compelling of a message we have for that board member to give when they're out raising dollars. Building the friendships is one part, but being able to articulate a very clear message of how those monies are gonna be used and the success that you had with transforming the life of one student because they got an education here. I think you're speaking with about $300,000 a year in terms of scholarships. What would those students be doing without those funds? I think the state is heading the right direction with the Nevada Promise. It's gonna give you another tool, but the need for working with the foundation and communicating where the struggles are for the institution are always gonna be, at least for me, at the top of the list, working very closely with the foundation. And also, I'm not the kind of leader that is going to ask someone to do something without me rolling up my sleeves and making it happen. I don't govern from an office, so I roll up my sleeves right there with you, and I don't expect something of anybody that I don't expect of myself. So communication, working with the folks, and telling the compelling message, and also having a plan for sustainability.
Okay, so at this point, we're going to move to public comment.
Let's see how much public comment there is, and then can we come back to you, Jeff?
Okay. So public comment, if there's any public comment in Carson. Okay, I know there's public comment out in Fallon. As a reminder, if you would please just state your name and affiliation before making your comment or asking a question.
Hi, this is Michelle Dondero. I'm a retired Western employee. And I want to ask, how do you propose to serve the wide area that Western was designed to serve?
It's a great question, and it all goes back to having a plan. I think that in terms of service, we need to look at what tools are available to make the work easier, but it's also about making those connections, finding out what the needs are, being out there, talking to community members. It's not just about being in one location. You have to be present. You have to hear what the needs are. And the needs are different for every community as it relates to specific academic needs. But the needs to educate everyone is the same across the board. So I think that a big part of that component would be having a vision to continue what the purpose of the institution was set up for. And that is to educate not just what happens here in Carson City, but what happens in all of the service area. So it's about having those relationships in the high schools. It's about having the relationships in the community. It's about having a direct communication plan, using the tools like texting software, using social media. I think that one of the things that I did look at is that there is a very organized feel to the social media use of the institution. But I think that for that traditional age student, there needs to be more of a personalized approach. So each segment that you are trying to reach has a specific way to reach out to it. I will work differently with high school students than I would with adult learners. I will work differently with how we provide training for business and industry than I would through our continuing education students. I would reach out differently to the Hispanic population as I would to other populations in the area. So you have to have a plan for each emerging market that you want to attract. And at the end of the day, you have to provide those services in a manner that's efficient, that's cost effective, and that provides access. And the other thing about access is, access, at least from where I stand, is one of those pillars in the community colleges. That's what they were founded on. But if the students are not successful after they got that access, it does not translate into an opportunity for them. And I think that this is extremely important. So it's not just about onboarding them, it's about once they're here, how do you work with them to ensure their success? And those strategies have to be applied here in Carson as they do in any of the other communities that we serve.
Thank you.
Is there any other public comment in Fallon? Okay.
Yeah. Can I ask another question, Marilyn?
Sure, go ahead, Buzz. We'll come back to you.
Buzz Sharman, Dr. Solis, I guess my question is, are you willing to make the hard decisions, the very difficult decisions? For example, in my own feeling is that there needs to be a serious paradigm change at Western because of the direction that the institution has been going for the last 7 years. To give you a base example that you can understand easily, Fallon is an agricultural community, and yet we have no welding on the fall schedule. That'll be the first time in 40 years that Fallon doesn't have a welding class on the schedule. And it's probably because the college doesn't want to go to the expense of hiring a full-time instructor or some silly thing like that. So my question is, are you willing to really examine these issues very closely and make some very, very difficult decisions?
I think it's a great question, Mr. Buzz, and I think that it's a fair question. And the answer in how I respond to you is that, yes, you have to be able to make difficult decisions. But I think that in making decisions as it relates to what's best for a community or for the institution, at least in my case, how I approach it is I want to see the data. I think that the data is an important part of decision making. It's not everything, but it's a big part to it. And one decision in one area may not be an area that impacts something here or vice versa. So the answer to that is yes. And unfortunately, it's part of our job. This is what we do. We make difficult decisions all the time. But at the end of the day, we also have to make decisions that are in the best interest of the institutions that we serve, the communities that we work with, and the people that we are working to educate. So I would have to get into the specifics of what those issues are, Mr. Buzz, to kind of determine what caused that. But I think that when you have a compelling vision and you have the team that can drive that vision to make some of those decisions, the answer is yes. But again, data, information, coming out there, speaking with the folks to find out why, what the needs are, why that happened, what took place. There's a lot of factors that come with that determination. So I would have to definitely get into the weeds of that, of those decisions, so to speak. But that would not come without having to speak to the folks, looking at the data, talking to the students, and also what are the needs in the community as it relates to the industry. Our welding shop goes from 8 in the morning to 10 o'clock at night, and every single student that goes through it gets hired right away. So if the situation is there in Fallon where those students taking those welding courses are accessing jobs, I'm gonna make some decisions to make sure that the individuals, based on what we have, can access those jobs through the education we provide. And I know, because I see it, I see students come in that don't have any other opportunity, but they can go weld, and they go through our program, and within one semester, we can't even get them to graduate, they've already got employment. So it's about getting folks access to these jobs, because at the end of the day, you can have a degree, but if the degree doesn't get you a job, we didn't do our part. So.
Okay, so we have time for one more. Mr. Brigger.
Thank you. Jeff Brigger, Foundation. It's appreciated. Just tell us a little bit why Western. What interested you to this position, this community, this college?
Question. So let me kind of start with a very global perspective. So I told a little bit about my background, and one of the things for me was I've always wanted to be out west. I've spent the last 26 years working in South Texas. I was caring for elderly parents. That responsibility is no longer there. I had a long discussion with my boss, and I told him if anything comes up in Nevada, Oregon, Washington, or Alaska, I'm going to look at those options. I'm a big outdoors person. I love to hunt. I love to fish. But that's just secondary to why Western. I don't have any other apps out there. I'm not looking for work. I've got a great job. But for me, providing education in a rural setting is very important. I'm a byproduct of a rural community. As I said, to me, this would be the huge city where I grew up. Like I said, no stores, no access to anything. I stopped going to school when I was in the eighth grade, and I trekked around out here because I didn't have any other options. You know, I quit school, I went to work, and I remember my dad telling me, he said, you know, now that you've made this decision, you've made an adult decision, now you have adult consequences, so you need to go out and find work. Well, where do you find work without an education? And that was a tough lesson learned. So I trekked around out in Oregon, I was out in Washington, you know, making it tough on myself. It wasn't until I was 22 that I went back to get an education. And it was never about not being able to do the work. I graduated with honors. I got my GED in the first week of leaving school, so it wasn't about my ability to do the work. The issue was that I didn't have anywhere to get an education because I couldn't access it. I didn't have a vehicle. We grew up in a poor community. So how do you get 40 miles away? So for me, this is, it's not just an opportunity. It's not just a job. It's something that's deeply personal to me. And I think that the position, the posting, the other item that was really important to me is that your mission is unique from other institutions in that you just don't say what you do. You talk about how you impact your community, how you enrich the lives of the people that you serve. And I think that in the language of a culture, whether it's a business culture or any other type of culture, you're gonna find the words that are meaningful to them because that's what's most important. So educating the community, shared governance, sustainability, excellence in education, and that concept of a rural community, being in a part of the country that I think I would be very interested in, made this attractive as a position to apply to. But it's the only one that I have out there. I'm not looking for work, and I'm not looking for a job. I don't think this is a job. This is a calling. And I think that anybody who's in these positions, when you get asked that question, why do you want to be a president? Why do you want the headaches? Why do you want? I don't look at it from that perspective. I look at it as having a seat at the table where decisions are going to be made about educating the community. So I hope that answers that question. Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Solis. We will call a recess. We will reconvene at 2:00.
Thank you so much, folks.